Hey guys, and welcome to Hunting Land, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you'd like to stay up to date on hunting tactics, land management, land values, and land market dynamics, this is the podcast for you. This week's show is brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you're frustrated with typical hunting and fishing magazines and tired of reading content meant for guys that are up in the north or up in the Midwest, check out Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Don't get left behind following the guidance of guys who don't fish or hunt in your home state. You can pick up a Great Days Outdoors Magazine subscription, and it will help you become a better Southern outdoorsman. Great Days Outdoors Magazine can be found at your local Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Tractor Supply Company, Rural King, Bass Pro Shops, or you can save online at greatdaysoutdoors.com. NCX. As a landowner, the more income I can generate from my land, the better I can take care of it. That's why I use NCX. NCX helps over 20,000 American landowners like you understand and maximize the value of every acre. Find new revenue streams for your land with programs like timber, carbon, wildlife habitat, solar energy, and more. Get started with a free account at ncx.com and discover the true value of your land. I'm your host, Joe Baia, here today with my co-host, Butch Theory. Butch, it's almost tractor season. As soon as those turkeys quit gobbling or quit letting me hunt them, that's when tractor time starts for me. I tell you what, I was had a timber harvest done on my place, and we got a bunch of slash piled up. And this past fall, we were having some work done, getting some food plots de-stumped, and the excavator operator was moving some of those piles around, you know, as he was de-stumping, and he sent me a video of pretty awful swarm of yellow jackets that he got stirred up around one of those piles. And as I was watching those things nail the cab of that excavator, I was thinking, you don't have a cab on your tractor.
Yeah.
I would hate to stir up something like that.
Pile of murder hornets.
Yeah. Be cabless. Yeah. But you know, I don't have a cab on my tractor. That's one of the things I've been thinking about maybe upgrading. I like my little tractor. It's nimble. It's, you know.
Yeah, but you can get in and out of places. You can get under low-hanging limbs easily. Yeah. You don't have to be as worried about trimming.
Yeah, fairly easy. Definitely. To tow, you know. I mean, it's there's pros and cons to having bigger and smaller. My place gets kind of wet. It's nice to have a tractor that's not so heavy.
Yeah.
But seeing him dealing with that, being able to go to your place and run a tractor with a cab and have air conditioning. Also, just being able to take my boys on a...
That's right. Yeah, Lillian rides with me all the time. She loves
a little jump seat or something like that. All that kind of stuff has got me thinking about maybe a little bigger tractor or something like that. But I always wonder, you know, like, what is the right size? It's tough to say. I don't really know how you figure that out. I don't know if you go by the amount of acreage you've got. I don't know if you go by the amount of acreage you're actually going to need to manage. You know, not all acreage is the same. You got a bunch of timber, you may never hardly be in there with a tractor. But if you got wide open pastures and probably a whole different set of requirements, I'm sure everybody has a little different tractor that's perfect for them. And that's the reason for today's show. We're going to try to dive into a framework, a recipe, so to speak, of what you can think about when you think about your land. And if you're trying to figure out the perfect size tractor for your place, to do that, we're talking with Shannon Moore of LS Tractor. Shannon, thanks for joining us today on Hunting Land, man. You know, before we get into this and really trying to help people decipher what the best tractor is for their place, tell us a little bit about what you do at LS.
Hey, no problem, guys. And I don't want to tell you guys, thank you for taking the time to reach out to us and learn a little bit about what we do at LS Tractor and what we're all about. Leaning on where I come from, you know, I was born and raised in a farm in southeastern Indiana. I've had quite the background. You know, I majored in accounting and finance in college, and you know, the professor there told me I would never be a good accountant or a finance guy because I can't sit still very often. And they were truly right about that situation. So, you know, I got in the casket world for a while, sold underground caskets for people with Batesville Casket, and got into, you know, Skag lawnmowers and Husqvarna lawnmowers, and then been with LS for about 6 years now.
Very cool. That's an interesting background. It's funny how we all get to where we are. I know I didn't start out in media. You know, I was actually in sports medicine, and you know, somehow you find yourself following certain channels, and then here we are. That's really cool, man.
Yeah, I mean, And some of that, you know, in my background is, you know, it's funny how it works. You know, your mom always wants you to do something better or something than they do. And that was her prerequisite. I had to go to college before I could come back and farm. And unfortunately, I never landed back there to help out.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of my same story too. You know, you get pushed in certain directions, and a lot of times it's best to just follow your heart on that kind of stuff. But, you know, speaking of that, like, you come from a farming background. That's really the purpose of this show. I mean, what I need on my 200 acres, which is mostly timberland, you know, it's recreational timberland. We plant some food plots here and there. We do some road maintenance. We do some stuff around the camp. But we're not row cropping. We're not, you know, cattle farming. We're not doing any of that kind of production agriculture. I would imagine that the guys who are looking for a tractor that have those kind of needs, what they need on 200 acres might be different than what I do. So before we really get into deciphering that, I feel like we need to get a basic understanding of tractors and maybe an easy way to understand, because you see the words subcompact, compact, utility thrown around. What does all that mean? If you're comparing classes of tractors, like, give our audience an easy way to understand them.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. You know, when we look at farming and where it is today, where it came from in the past, it's changed so much. And LS Tractor as a whole is not a what we call a row crop company. We don't build tractors for the row crop arena. We look at the three classes that you brought up, first being a subcompact tractor. Now, that tractor, you know, is really designed for a small acreage type as a whole, a small acreage owner that, you know, might have a couple horses and want to clean the stalls out, want to, you know, spread the manure after they get the stalls cleaned out, might have some steep terrain, and a zero turn mower can't accommodate the steep terrain. It might be that customer, you know, that lives in a colder climate that wants to clean the driveway off. I mean, so that subcompact is really designed 25 horsepower and down for a real small type application as far as what that tractor is used for. And then you jump into the world of compact tractors where, you know, again, it's kind of hence the name. It's not stretched out as long as what the old, you know, 40-20 John Deere's and the old product was. It's more compact, can get into tighter spaces, can have higher lifting capacities and so forth. And three, whether that's on the loader or whether that's on the 3-point. And then the last category that, you know, we focus on at LS and a lot of manufacturers focus on as well is the utility type segment. That tractor is going to be designed more for that, the customer that, you know, might be have a 50 cow calf operation, need to do a little baling, a little cutting, and moving those bales around from, you know, point A to point B. So you're going to get, you know, higher clearances as we jump up from subcompact, compact to utilities. You're going to get higher lifting capacities. So it's truly, you know, what is that tractor going to be utilized for on whatever type of operation it's going into?
Yeah, that's a great point there. You answered a couple of things there that leads into my next question. Like, when somebody comes into a dealership, an LS dealership, like, what are some of the first things that you ask? Some, you know, guy comes in and goes, I need a tractor. You know, I have 500 acres. I'm not real sure which size I need. What are some of the questions you ask in order to get that person in the right fit for them?
Well, I mean, it's very important that at that given dealership, that salesperson that's working that dealership does start to ask these questions before we get too honed in on trying to sell somebody the wrong tractor. You know, when you talk about 500 acres, I mean, that brings up a great point. You know, as a whole, someone that's farming 500 acres is totally different than someone that has 500 acres of, say, timber ground and maybe 9 acres of food plot on that. Right. You know, so we've got to start by asking that customer, you know, how much are you taking care of, and what are you doing with the tractor to take care of, you know, your property at hand?
Makes sense. So it's not so much like you were talking about with the classes of tractor, subcompact, small, quote unquote, small acreage, compact, a little bit bigger in utility, you know, bigger still. When it comes to getting somebody into the right size tractor, it's not so simple as just total acreage or tillable acreage. You got to really take into account. So when you do start to think about acreage just in that one bucket, what's most important to consider there? Is it the tillable ground? that you really want to know more about? Or is it, you know, what they're doing on that acreage? Because, like, you know, with 5 miles of roads on my place, they all got to get bush hogged at some point, but they don't have to get bush hogged that often. I mean, honestly, once a year, maybe twice a year at max is all I've got to do there. So from an acreage standpoint, what's important to know?
Well, I mean, you bring up a very good point. You know, you looked at specifically, you know, one of the applications you're doing to take care of your piece of property, you know, and we've got to start to really dive deeper into that. What else are you going to do in that area? So, for example, you know, you feel that, you know, you won't mind spending excess time out there, and a subcompact tractor, you know, serves your needs just fine because time is not of the essence. So it would satisfy taking care of those paths. But now when we look a little deeper and you say, you know, you got trees that come down and you possibly want to put a grapple to help move those logs out from the paths and get them back up to the barn or get them back up to your shed or wherever, maybe you're going to sell them. Maybe you're going to cut them up for your own firewood or whatnot. Now, all of a sudden, you know, when we put a grapple on the front of a subcompact that was meeting your needs, just taking care of those paths on your property, it could be done with a subcompact tractor. You know, if time is not important to you and you enjoy sitting on your tractor, taking care of those paths, that tractor would suffice and meet your needs just fine. But when you look at it a little deeper and you ask a few more questions, say, for example, a big tree fell across one of those paths, and then you wanted to have the ability to move, you know, that log or that, you know, that tree from point A to point B on your farm, now that subcompact tractor is not probably going to meet your needs. So that's in essence what I'm saying. We've got to continue to ask the questions to make sure we get you put in the right tractor.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Like you said, depending on how much time you've got, I mean, bigger tractors mean bigger implements, which means fewer passes, which means you can do more in less time.
But bigger expenses
at
as well.
At a cost, and then you lose the nimble factor, which is very important on timberland. I think also, you know, maybe that's just not the limiting consideration would be my thought, Shannon. Like, I can tell you right now, I have a 275-gallon IBC tote that we use at camp a lot to move water. Like, we just planted 50 chestnut trees. I may want to run out there this summer if we get into a drought and put some water on the trees. Well, if I've got 275 gallons of water on a front end loader, I've got to make sure I've got a front end loader that can pick that thing up. And right now, my tractor cannot. My tractor can pick it up when it's about half full, and that's it. So is that kind of what you're going after when you're asking these questions? Is you're trying to find what's everything you're going to do, and then what's possibly something that you couldn't do? Maybe you can do 8 out of the 10 things with this tractor, but you can't do everything. That's not going to be good, right? Because sometimes you got to buy more capacity in certain areas, I guess.
What you bring up is exactly what, you know, is so important at that dealership, because you in essence are trying to, in some instances, you might be buying your first tractor. This could be you just bought this property and this is the first tractor that you've ever purchased. So you don't realize that water tank you're wanting to move is going to weigh, with, you know, 8 pounds a gallon of water in that thing, is going to weigh about 2,200 pounds.
Right.
No subcompact tractor is going to move that from point A to point B. So yeah, as we ask different questions and we ask them, you know, deeper and deeper, we'll figure out what all you're ideally wanting to use this tractor for and try to dial in on the tractor that's going to best serve your needs. Because the last thing we want you to do is come there in a year from now and say, you know, I bought the wrong tractor. I should have just listened to you. I should have bought a little bit bigger tractor. Or vice versa, I didn't need to buy a utility tractor. I can't get it into some spaces that I really wanted to get it into. So these questions will hopefully eliminate and dial you in on the tractor that best serves your needs.
Yep. As you just alluded to there, it seems like more times than not, you know, my boats seem to have gotten bigger over the years as my family has grown, and you know, I could access more water and things like that. So that's definitely got to find a happy balance there. You know, with these different size tractors, what are some things that we just talked a little bit there about, you know, you're not anticipating that heavy water, you know, buffalo that you need to lift or something like that. But what are some of the other most important factors to look at? You know, talking about horsepower and power at the PTO, what are some rules of thumb to get somebody in that right range of the horsepower and the power at the PTO they need?
Well, the thing is, you know, you have some instances where a customer's coming in and might have bought a tractor and realized that they didn't buy a big enough one. And in those instances, you've got to ask them, what are the current implements that you have, whether it's a PTO implement, whether it's a ground engagement implement, what are you, you know, using this tractor with, so you can dial in on getting the correct horsepower, you know, PTO horsepower versus engine horsepower, you know, because they're always off. You're going to lose, you know, depending upon if it's a gear versus a hydro, you're going to lose horsepower from that engine back to the PTO. So those questions got to be asked at the point of purchase to make sure that, you know, we're dialing in where we need to be at.
Thinking about horsepower a little bit, that's always been confusing for me, because when you're used to, I didn't grow up on a farm. I didn't deal with tractors a lot as a kid. I dealt with outboard engines. I dealt with big diesel boat engines. I dealt with car engines. And so when you hear somebody talk about a, man, that's a big tractor, that's 100 horsepower tractor, I'm going, that's not a lot of horsepower in my mind, you know?
Right.
So it's taken me a while to get used to that, just the horsepower differences. Where does horsepower really matter? What does more horsepower allow you to do in a tractor that less does not?
Well, I mean, typically, as you look at it kind of in a granular type view, you're losing somewhere between 15 to 20% horsepower from what that engine's able to, you know, produce to what you can actually pull off of the PTO shaft at the back of the tractor, or say a mid-mount PTO coming off the center of the tractor on, you know, compacts and subcompacts. But when you look at it, you know, as a whole, the horsepower is critical, because depending upon what implement you're pulling that is requiring PTO, you also have to take in consideration the weight of that particular implement. Because when we get on hilly terrain, the last thing we want is a heavy piece of equipment behind that tractor, pushing that tractor and telling that tractor what it's going to do versus what the operator wants that tractor to do.
You know, you're talking about getting pushed around, and luckily for me, because I'm a little bit accident prone. Luckily for me, my place is just flat as a pancake, so yeah.
I've got a little too much into the pond before I didn't necessarily want to.
Butch,
I admit,
Butch had to learn that this particular ditch on my property was not a road.
Oh God, yeah, that's true.
But anyway, so you know, I haven't had to think about stability much. Maneuverability is very important on my place. It's a timberland track. There's not a lot of room to turn around and do various things. So maneuverability is really important to me. How do you guide people who may need something one way or the other, or both? Like, what kind of specifications can people look for that's going to be able to help them determine if this is a tractor that's going to be able to operate well in tight terrain or on uneven terrain?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it as a whole, most subcompact tractors are not going to give you much ability to kind of spread that tractor out from side to side. When you get into your compact and definitely in your utility segment, you get into the ability where you can increase the basically the footprint of the tractor, giving yourself a little bit more stability on steeper terrain that can kind of get you in a little bit of a trouble. But, you know, again, you got to get back to those questions, because, you know, a lot of people don't have, you know, the financial ability to buy multiple pieces of equipment. They're trying to find, you know, one piece that can kind of serve multiple different purposes on their farm. You know, for example, looking at some of you guys' property you're talking about, I'm sure that, you know, there's some paths that, you know, you want to maintain or cut through some timber ground. You know, and that being said, you know, when we get into the utility side of the tractor, we're getting into a lot higher tractor that's going to require more clearance from limbs and so forth than what a subcompact or a compact tractor would require. Along with that being said, you know, some operators in colder climate, you know, like to be inside a tractor during the cold weather. You know, again, taking that tractor, you know, with a cab enclosure into the woods, we're going to have to make sure that those paths can accommodate that, so you're not, you know, having to replace your glass in your cab. So basically what you're looking at, again, it's going to depend on your application. You know, if time isn't of the tight situation in your particular life, you got plenty of time to spend on the tractor, you might even want to look at a subcompact. Now you could take a subcompact into a barn, clean out a stall, because you pick up so much more maneuverability, because you don't have such a large footprint going in there using the loader. So those are just some examples.
Butch, this is sounding a lot like the offshore boat versus inshore boat consideration.
For sure. Yeah, I want a tractor that's light, that's four-wheel drive, that can do everything, that has a cab, that can go in all the places I need to go.
Right. All right, folks, we'll be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of the businesses that make this show free for you every episode. This week's show is brought to you by Farm Credit of Northwest Florida. Farm Credit of Northwest Florida has over a century of experience providing financing for people who live, work, or play in the country. Farm Credit is here to help you make your dream of country living a reality. Their unique cooperative structure allows them to return some of their profits back to their borrowers. This patronage distribution effectively lowers a borrower's rate. To get started with your first or next land purchase, give them a call at 855-GO-RURAL or visit them at www.gorural.net. Mallard Bay Outdoors. MallardBay.com is the Airbnb style marketplace for discovering and booking your next guided hunting and fishing adventures. The Mallard Bay platform was built by sportsmen for sportsmen. Their mission is to help expand access to affordable and successful hunting by connecting you with verified outfitters across the United States. You can browse trips and prices by state or species, select the dates you'd like to go, message outfitters, and secure your dates all from one platform, MallardBay.com. Not sure where you want to go yet? Reach out on Instagram or Facebook, and they can help you find your dream hunt. Right, yeah, no, it's like there. It's hard to make a middle ground that can do everything. It almost sounds like for some people, they need a little tractor and a big tractor.
Right.
And maybe that is the best scenario. Maybe that's the most economical scenario. It just depends on your situation, I'm sure. Yeah, I want to go back to what you said about having a cab. I opened up the show talking about an experience I've had this past year where I had a guy running an excavator on my property, and he stirred up a yellow jacket nest. And he sent me a video on his phone of these yellow jackets just bombing his cab on that excavator. And I was thinking, you know, I could have easily done that on my tractor that does not have a cab. I don't want to do that. And I definitely don't want one of my boys to get into something like that. Having a cab for me, I mean, you know, it'd be nice to have air conditioning in the South Alabama heat, but I can live without it. I mean, I've been tractoring for long enough without it that I'm not going to die. But it'd be nice to have a cab. When you go to a cab, what are the considerations that need to happen? Like, I've always heard people say, well, you're going to lose horsepower. And then I've heard people say, well, you know, you get a cab and you operate in it in timberland conditions, you're going to be constantly cleaning out the air filter and things like that. So if you do want a cab, if a cab is like, nope, got to have a cab, that's part of my requirement, does that require a different tractor than it otherwise would if you didn't have the cab?
Well, in the world of most tractor manufacturers, LS, you know, specifically, I can talk cabs. You know, you've got what they call a factory cab that is installed on the tractor when it's coming through the production line. The pluses of, you know, a factory cab, it's much tighter. It's going to have the ability to have AC in it, just what you're talking about. So that being said about the factory cab, you have the field cab as well. That field cab is going to be installed at your local dealership. You know, it's going to basically, you know, it's designed for those people that want to be out utilizing their tractor in a colder type of climate to get in the heat. Not offering AC in that field cab, you know, kind of makes, you know, that ability not something you'd want in the summertime, but you would have the ability, you could take off, take out the windows, take off, kind of create a little bit more airflow there in the summertime to keep you cool.
You know, Shannon, aside from the cab consideration, and I'm still a little bit on the fence about that. Like I said, there's some pros and cons are there for me. I mean, I do like having the open station when I've got people around me. It seems like it's just a little bit easier to communicate. I'm oftentimes running my tractor up there alone, and I'm up and down off the tractor, on the tractor. You know, if I'm pulling a landscape rake and I'm freshening up a fire break or something like that, I'm constantly going back there cleaning sticks out of the landscape rake. You know, having to open doors and that kind of thing is would have some positives and negatives for me personally. One of the things that I can't see a con in is a hydrostatic transmission. That being said, I'm not a tractor expert, so I love my hydrostatic transmission. I don't know why I would want a transmission that would be any different. Why would I? I mean, why aren't all tractors made with hydrostats is what I can't understand.
Well, I mean, years ago, when tractors first come out, you know, every tractor on the market had a clutch and a gear shift. So if you wanted to increase speed, you were going to have to hit the clutch, you know, step on the clutch and change your gears. And then you had on most tractors, a high and low range that would pick up speed or decrease speed, increase torque, decrease torque, depending upon which, you know, whichever you were searching for. After that, I mean, they kind of changed gears and tried to make a little bit better tractor with what you call a sinker shift technology, which would give you the operator the ability to go from forward to reverse at a low speed and not have to clutch. So that kind of was the next transition. And then the latest transition is into the hydro, which, you know, gives the operator the ability to step on the one pedal and go forward or step on the other pedal and go in reverse. To your point, Joe, I mean, it's spot on. There isn't a tractor that's easier to operate than a hydro. But again, you've got to ask that customer, what are they going to do? Because if we're selling it to, say, for example, a nursery that's going to be loading mulch all day, every day, sometimes a hydrostat isn't the way to go. It's just you're better off there and looking at a sinker type system in that transmission. But, you know, as far as trainability, there isn't a tractor easier to train on than a hydrostat.
What about four-wheel drive, Shannon? Are there options without four-wheel drive? And why would you not want to get a tractor with four-wheel drive?
Butch, at LLS, we don't make a tractor that's non-four-wheel drive, you know, and I tell people all the time, you know, it's so simple because now you even have the ability, you could put straight turf tires on a subcompact, compact tractor, go out in pretty much any type of environment. And when you start to lose a little traction, you can flip over to four-wheel drive and get yourself out. We don't want you running the four-wheel drive all the time. It's very hard, especially, you know, on asphalt or concrete surfaces. It's very hard on that front differential because there's just not much give there. But today's technology has improved so much that, you know, we feel four-wheel drive is a must.
We were talking earlier about front end loader capacity. You know, that's a limiting factor for me right now with my current tractor, where I've got some things. Water totes has been an issue. Putting up some shooting houses where we're raising wasn't so much the lift capacity as it was just the lift height. I just didn't have enough height to do what I needed to do with my front end loader. That being said, we do a lot of have done quite a few podcasts on no-till planting, and I am fixing to make the upgrade to a no-till drill. Getting away from broadcast seeding. And that's a very heavy implement. One of the things I've had to struggle with when I've been looking at three-point lift capacity is trying to understand that. Like, I know if I've got an item on my front-end loader and I've got that item really close to the pins, then I've got more lift capacity than if it's way out away from the pins. And I'm wondering, am I going to run into that when I have a three-point implement? So if I've got something like a big, heavy seed drill, if I look at the implement that I'm planning to run, and we say that implement weighs 2,000 pounds, and I go and look at a tractor's three-point lift capacity, and it says the lift capacity on this three-point is 2,100 pounds, is that going to be enough? Is it that simple? Or is there some calculating that needs to go into, like, you want to have some overage? Like, if you're planning on running a 2,000-pound implement, you might want 2,500 pounds or 3,000 pounds of lift capacity. As one thing I've learned about trucks, if I'm towing a 5,000-pound trailer, I don't want a truck that's got a 5,500-pound towing capacity. I'd rather have, like, a 10,000-pound towing capacity. I want a lot left over. How does that translate to tractors and three-point hitches?
When we look at the loader, for example, it works the exact same way the three-point does. So we measure lift capacity at the pins on the loader. We measure lift capacity at the pins at the three-point hitch. The further out you get, whether we're talking, you know, pallet forks on the front end of that or that big heavy no-till drill that you're looking at buying, the more it's going to affect how much that tractor can actually lift up. It gets very, very important that you do some math on that and not just guess on what it is, because the last thing we want is that tractor to, you know, turn over.
Right.
It's very important. And you're right. Some of these no-till drills are getting extremely heavy. Two or three varieties out there I can think off the top of my head that, you know, there is just a ton of steel in some of these. So it's something that we've got to look at. And with that, we've got to do some geometry and do some math there to figure out we're getting the right tractor for you. And we're not undersizing you because we don't want to get anybody hurt.
Know several things that I've run into whenever we have some issues with a tractor on our property is, you know, we're pretty remote. Last thing that I want to do at the end of a weekend is, you know, haul a tractor 500 miles in order to get it serviced. Whenever we're talking about, you know, service and maintenance on these tractors, because they're expensive, it's not a small piece of equipment that just, you know, you can just throw in the barn and hope it works next time you need to go use it. What are some other things we need to think about when it comes to service and maintenance on these things?
To me, the most important thing is just making sure you're maintaining your tractor. You know, when you purchase that tractor and you get it home, the dealer's going to go over the tractor and what you need to do as the owner of that tractor to maintain it and make sure it lasts a long time. You know, make yourself some notes, take care of the tractor. More than anything, what I see time and time again is a tractor that has problems was not being maintained properly. Was being overworked. So it gets back to probably bought a tractor that, you know, should have bought a little bit more tractor and we skimped by because we didn't want to spend a little extra money and get the tractor that we needed.
You know, thinking about that, there's a lot to think about. One of the things I've run into with my current setup is hydraulic flow. So, you know, I've got a third function on my front end loader. I've got some rear remotes on the tractor. I'd like to run like a top and tilt kit on the rear when I'm running that box blade. I've got the grapple on the front. You know, I look like a Swiss Army knife going through the woods. I've got an implement on everything. I got a gun strapped to the roll bar. I mean, it's comical, but when you try to do too many things with hydraulics, I've noticed, you know, you can't do anything. Nothing's working well because I just don't have enough flow. I don't have enough flow to run multiple things at once. How do you guide people on hydraulics? I see a lot of tractors without a third function. And, you know, me personally, that's huge, being able to have a grapple. I got trees falling across roads all the time. I'm constantly picking things up with that grapple. So for me, it's a must. How do you advise people think about third functions and hydraulic flow? Because I almost feel like that's almost like four-wheel drive. Like, I'd rather have it and not need it than not have it at all. Because it's probably not an easy thing to add after the fact, is it?
No, I mean, third function, you know, basically the way I view it as, you know, you've got third function on the front of the tractor, and on the rear of the tractor, you're going to have hydraulic remotes on the back of that tractor. Now, some tractors are going to come standard with third function capability. You're going to have to add plumbing and so forth. Other tractors you're going to have to add everything to get third function on the front of that tractor. And again, other tractors will have some standard remotes, multiple remotes on the back, and you have the ability to add more remotes on the back of that tractor. But flow is very important. So, you know, if you're trying to chase that Swiss Army knife tractor that you're talking about, most generally, the high, you know, subcompact tractors are going to have your most limited capacity on hydraulic flow. And flow is important, but also capacity is very important as well, because we could have the flow on a tractor, but if we don't have the capacity for that oil to cool itself back down, that's when we run into problems. And a prime example is a customer wanting to put, say, a snow broom on the front of a subcompact tractor. That broom is requiring so much hydraulic flow to run that if we don't have the capacity on that tractor to cool that oil back down, that's where we'll run into problems at.
Shannon, you mentioned earlier about, you know, some of the biggest problems you see is people not maintaining their tractor properly. What can we do as the tractor users to keep an eye on? What do we need to keep an eye on as far as, you know, routine maintenance?
I just, you know, if I had that magic wand and I could wave it, I would say, you know, you buy and you spend that kind of money on a new piece of equipment like that. Take the time, you know, on a rainy day, on a cold, snowy day, to read the owner's manual, read the operator's manual to see exactly what is expected out of you. If you'll just take the time to read it, it will pick up different bullet points that you can start to put in your routine and really capitalize on and making sure that tractor runs for a long period of time before you run into any problems. The other thing I would say that, you know, the electronics today to meet emissions on tractors, it just gets tougher and tougher and tougher for us to meet them. So to meet emissions, we have to add more electronics on the tractor. If you can keep that tractor in a drier type environment, out of moisture, you're going to have a lot longer life and a lot more happy days working your tractor.
Let's get into that just a second, because here, you know, here in the Southeast, I don't know, dry environments are tough to come by between the rain and the humidity. I mean, it's just always wet down here. When you say dry, obviously undercover is going to help. Do you feel like a humid environment is going to wreak havoc? I mean, does that matter?
No, I don't think, you know, the humid environment has a ton to do with it. More what I would tell you is that tractor just sits outside and gets rained on every day.
Yeah.
When it's not being used, or you've got the, you know, inability of the north, you guys don't have it down there, but setting, you know, in a, say a cold storage type building with a lot of airflow going through it as the frost comes out of the ground in the wintertime. And here lately, it's been coming out multiple times during the year, not like it used to, but you'll notice that, you know, you go out into the shed and everything is just soaking wet.
Yeah.
That has, you know, it can have negative connotation on electronics.
No doubt. Sounds like Alabama pretty much all the time. Everything's right. Always wet here.
We call it the wet blanket of hate down here.
Yep, it's, pretty much.
Yeah, no fun for sure. Well, Shannon, you have given us a lot to think about with regards to tractors, and I'm sure everybody's scenario is different and everybody's unique needs are different. I know mine are certainly a little bit different than Butch's, although he does have a cab on his tractor. I'm jealous of that sometimes.
So nice. I love it. I don't think I could ever go back.
Yeah, I could see that. But anything new happening with you guys this year over at LS? I saw you guys teamed up with Mossy Oak, and I don't know, man. I feel like I need a camo tractor. What's going on there?
Yeah, we did. We formed a partnership with those guys to help promote their brand and help promote our brand as well. And, you know, we've developed one tractor model right now, MT357 Hydro, and that's an open station tractor that has been dipped with the Mossy Oak pattern all over it. So I'm not saying that, you know, all customers, you know, are going to want a Mossy Oak tractor, but it just does, you know, to me, it's a great benefit to promote both Mossy Oak and LS Tractor partnership and try to really, you know, expand upon that.
That's really cool. I think that's a great thing because I don't know, most of the tractor owners I know, Butch, are using them on recreational hunt properties. I mean,
oh yeah.
Granted, I don't farm, and so I don't run around with a lot of farmers, but it's cool that y'all are looking at things from the angle of an outdoorsman, because there's a lot of folks farming for wildlife these days. And Mossy Oak's been in the game for a long time. They're a great company.
Yeah, we had a great guy that used to work for us. He's since moved on, but he came up with a great idea. So we're working with Bigfoot right now to see if we can get Bigfoot interested in buying a Mossy Oak tractor, you know, because, you know, the whole theory of Bigfoot is he stays invisible. No one ever gets to see him. So we're thinking if we can get this deal struck with Bigfoot, that he could be a good spokesman.
Well, nobody'd ever know, though, is the problem.
That's, you know, right. So. Never see him. Oh, man, that gamekeeper really looks really cool. Shannon, like Joe said, you've done a great job of walking us through the lineup there and kind of giving people direction. You know, if they're looking to get a tractor for their land or an upgrade on their tractor, if people want to follow along with LS and look at some of the resources you guys have online, where would you point them to?
Just lstractorusa.com.
Awesome. We enjoyed it today. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks, guys. And I will leave you with one thing. Safety is the utmost important thing for us at LS Tractor, and realize that, you know, open station tractors come with a ROPS. That's a rollover protection metal bar on the back of that tractor. That ROPS needs to be up at all times, and the seatbelt needs to be on. If you do decide to lower your ROPS because you need to get it in someplace or working in some tight environment, that is the time to take your safety belt off. We don't want you wearing your safety belt with the ROPS folded down.
Great reminder, man. It can happen fast with all kinds of equipment. Tractors are absolutely no different. And it's always important to keep that in mind. That's something I try to tell myself every time I go and get on the thing, is to slow down,
That's right.
Assess whatever the situation.
It's not worth it. Whatever.
Just you get up careful. There, you know, it's happening on a weekend. You're trying to get everything done.
Oh, yeah.
And
no
it's
doubt.
Easy to get in a rush, and it's an unnecessary risk to take.
Overlook some things that you should not overlook.
Yeah, that's a great way to leave it. Thanks so much, Shannon.
Thanks, guys, for your time. Appreciate everything you guys do for us.
There's a lot to think about when it comes to buying a tractor, man.
It's a lot of options. It's a lot. It can be a little overwhelming.
You guys are I don't know, what is this, your third, fourth tractor y'all've got at y'all's place now? It seems like every time I go there, y'all got a bigger one and a bigger one and a bigger one.
Yep. I think this is our fourth one, man.
And that's not because they're breaking down, right? It's because
no.
You're unable to do some of the things you wanted to do.
Yeah, pretty much every single time we've bought a bigger one. We started out with no cab, subcompact, arena, and then had to upgrade to a cab. You know, as the more land we got that needed to be tended to. And then, yeah, it just kind of got bigger every time. Like I was kind of saying in the show, it kind of happened with my boats as well. It kind of seems like, you know, you get bigger, bigger family. You want, like you were saying, you want your boys to ride with you on the tractor. You just, your needs change. So it's important to figure out what you're going to need and not what you need right this second.
And to make sure that what you read in the specifications matches up with what you actually need to do. I mean, that's been eye-opening for me and talking to Shannon today, you know, with regards to like 3-point lift capacity, front end loader capacity. Just because it says it can lift 2,000 pounds, if you've got a 2,000 pound implement, it probably isn't going to be able to lift it if it extends much past the pins at all, which a 2,000 pound implement probably is going to. So, you know, I think the thing I took away from today is everybody that's listening to this needs to look at their unique situation and look at everything that they want to do, they're currently doing, and that they could see themselves, like you said, Butch, they could see themselves wanting to do in the future, and make sure that the tractor they're looking at solves for all those things. Maybe you don't have a no-till drill right now, but if you could see yourself getting one, you need to think about that. Otherwise, it's not just a purchase of a no-till drill you got to make. It's you got to buy
another tractor
drill, and you got to buy a tractor that can run.
Well, what if that 150 comes open next to you, and all of a sudden your tractor is not big enough because you have more ground to take care of now? So
that's
definitely
right.
A lot to think about.
Absolutely. Good stuff from LS.
Enjoyed it.
This week's show is brought to you by Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply offer numerous items to help get your project done right the first time. They carry a variety of different panel profiles and your choice of colors and gauges with all the matching trim and accessories. They also offer a full line of hardware items and post-frame building design. Their friendly and knowledgeable sales representatives are always willing to help answer any questions or concerns you may have. Contact them with any questions or to get a free estimate today. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply, your metal roofing headquarters. Southern Seed and Feed. Do you want to provide better nutrients to your deer? If so, try Southern Buck Food Plot Blends. Your deer will love it. At Southern Seed and Feed, they specialize in making textured feed for horses, cattle, sheep, goats, hogs, chickens, small animals, and wildlife. Their products are proven irresistible, scientifically formulated to promote excellent herd health and hunter satisfaction. They supply products to various distributors throughout the South. So visit their website at southernseedfeed.com or call 662-726-2638 to find the dealer nearest you. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Appreciate you joining us. We want to make it easy for you to listen, so here's a handy option for you. To get the podcast emailed to you each week, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. Again, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. You'll join our email list, and wherever you are listening to podcasts, go ahead, subscribe, rate, and review. Send us a written review. We'd love to hear from you. If you've got a show topic that you are interested in and like to see us cover, just email us at pros@landhunting.com. That's going to do it for us. Y'all stay safe out there. We'll talk to you next time.